I'm Christine Senek. I came here, actually, we were the first class. I think Tom May is the only person that was the first class for the PhD graduates in this program of applied philosophy. We were colleagues together. So with that, we both were actually people that came here pretty recently after Ray was hired and Chris was hired. And I came out here in, it would have been the spring of 88, which I believe was the conference that was referenced about the rock music. I believe, actually, I was at that conference interviewing, kind of seeing if this is where I wanted to go to graduate school and all, because I had actually scoped this program out and scoped out Ray Fry. Because, yes, folks, I am a utilitarian, and still am one today. So I came in to a relationship knowing from the utilitarian that I studied with as an undergraduate student, whose name is Laura Purdy, I knew what I was in for. I wanted that. I wanted to study utilitarianism with a utilitarian, because quite frankly, you do not want to study utilitarianism with somebody that's not a utilitarian. So luckily, the good folks here actually not only wanted me, but gave me money, which was very, very lovely and helpful. And it was soon after I had arrived the following fall that Ray indeed did take an interest in me. I assumed that he had, which is why I was being invited to come and given assistantship stipends. There are tons of stories, so many stories. I actually had the great task one summer of moving his office. I can't remember which. We were moving out of Schatzel into our temporary location at College Park. And, of course, there were books and books. And he bought books that he had already purchased. Like, he had three copies of Griffin's Well-Being, including the one that I spilled oil on. I borrowed the book from him, put it in the trunk of my Ford Escort, something we had in common, and oil got all over it. So for the rest of my entire career, I heard about how I just deliberately poured oil on his treasured books, which, for those of you that are younger, back in the late 80s and early 90s, it was hard for us to get books. There was no Amazon. We had to drive and special order them from Ann Arbor, actually. We went up to Borders, and that's how we got our research books, because at the time, nobody here had any clue of how to do that and how to order stuff for us that way. And usually it was easier to just go buy them, even as a graduate student, versus try to get them on interlibrary loan, like you're going to read Griffin's Well-Being, which was my book, in 10 days. Like, interlibrary loan did not help us. So Ray very nicely allowed me to borrow his book, and I spilled motor oil all over it. But there's so many stories, and so many stories that came out of the office cleaning. Like, well, not really stories, but physical matter. In addition to the books and the planks and the cinder blocks that held the planks, that held the books, there were these boxes that I presented to him when he came back after visiting his father. And there were boxes in the hallway, and some of you that were there during the summer probably remember the move. And they were filled with two things. And what were those two things? Pens and paper. Boxes of pens and paper. And it wasn't American paper. It was all British-sized paper. And it turned out that this was a bounty for me at the end of the summer, because he said, you can take all that because I'll just collect more in about a year. So I think in my ex-husband's house, I think I left behind my dissertation that never came to be and boxes of British-sized paper notebooks. But beyond the stories and beyond all of that, I have not completed my PhD. That sounds like a confession. It kind of sort of is, but it's not a big deal some 20 years later. And I did not end up going into academia. I do teach occasionally as an adjunct instructor, which is fun. It's great fun to torment my students in the same way that Ray did, which, oddly enough, it must be a utilitarian thing, is very much the same way that Laura Purdy taught as well. It was very natural for me. So what I do now is marketing. And so I tried to figure out a poster session. How does marketing relate? I mean, and it's really easy. Through all of the stories and through all of the seminars as a graduate student, and through all of the beatings that we took mentally in those seminars that probably could not take place today because there would be lawsuits. Because back in the day, it was brutal. There were times when you left there and you went to Campus Poly Eyes because you needed to drink, and you needed to drink severely. What he did in those classrooms was actually miraculous. What he did to our mind in that classroom was phenomenal. And I use that every moment of my day. And so do you. Every moment of the day, how you think, how you see the world was shaped by this man. And that's a pretty miraculous thing. Thanks, Brett.
Hi, I'm Fred Miller, recently retired professor in the philosophy department, and was also executive director of the Social Philosophy and Policy Center, one of the directors along with Jeff Paul here. Ray was a colleague of mine both in the philosophy department and at the center, where he was a senior research fellow for many years. Ray had a lot of close contacts with our visiting scholars over the years, because a very large number of them, beginning with John Gray and Anthony Flew, would live in the budget Buckeye Motor Inn. For one reason, it was incredibly cheap. And so, since Ray was a permanent resident of the budget Buckeye, he knew everybody. So he was sort of Norman Berry, one of the people who came frequently as a scholar, began to refer to this group of scholars there as the Buckeye Cries, so for the Buckeye Circle, Ray Fry was always the hub of this circle. And it was always a great mystery to us as to why Ray Fry continued to live in this cheap motel. Why, you know, there were various theories about Ray as to why he continued to live there. Was it because he was just incredibly parsimonious and just couldn't bear to spend money to live in a better place? Was that the reason, or was he waiting for the next juicy offer from some other institution? Finally, my curiosity got to me, and so rather rudely one time I asked him, Ray, why is it that you continue to live in the budget Buckeye, and why don't you just get a house in town? And what Ray said is, I'm waiting to marry a wealthy woman. He was always looking for a wealthy woman. Some of you may remember that. And when he first came, he had all sorts of stories, as we've said. I was amazed at the stories he had, the people that he had met. And at the beginning, I tried to top him with a few stories, because I had met some rather bizarre and flamboyant people myself. So I would come up with these stories of people, but it always turned out that Ray had already met them himself. And he had more outrageous stories than mine. And I was gullible myself, but... after a couple years, we were talking about about how expensive England is. You know, he would be going back and forth. He had some appointment over in England related to medical ethics, and so he would go over there once a year. And so he was. We were talking about how expensive England was, and he said the last time he was in, I was in London. He said this would have been in the middle of the or toward the end of the 80s. He said the last time I was in London, I went out to dinner at a nice restaurant in London with a group of philosophers, and the bill for each of us was £400. He said. And so when I heard that story, I had an epiphany, which was that when you hear a story by Ray Fry, especially if it has a number, you want to divide that number by at least four, maybe by eight. And that was sort of after that was my hermeneutical principle of interpretation of every story I heard from Ray Fry. I agree with the people who have said he was definitely one of the most memorable and endearing people I've ever met. Thank you.
We have a couple things we've saved till the end. I'm sure you'll be able to continue swapping stories. I just want to remind you that the Coons Party House in Bowling Green will be open as of 8 p.m. Christian's on the corner of Williams and Clough from the Hampton. It's three blocks maybe, three and a half blocks. If any of you are at Best Western, it's even closer. Although the parties there all occur after I'm sound asleep, I just hear they're wonderful. We asked Russell DeSilvestro to kind of bring up the tail end because Russell has been putting together memorial minutes for the APA. And those memorial minutes typically sketch one's scholarly contributions, and we didn't want folks to lose sight of the fact that this wonderful man who told these amazing stories made wonderful contributions to the philosophical profession. So, Russell?
Thanks. I wanted to read this, and I preface it by letting you know that it is my best draft so far, but I'm interested in hearing any feedback from you with any suggestions for corrections or additions, subtractions, or even stylistic matters. R.G. Fry, 1941 through 2012. R.G. Fry lived until November 2012. He was professor emeritus at Bowling Green State University, where he had taught and served as a senior researcher at the Social Philosophy and Policy Center since 1986. Known for his numerous and wide-ranging books and articles in moral and political philosophy, he was one of the foremost utilitarians of his generation. Professor Fry, or Ray to those who knew him, lived, learned, and taught in both England and the United States and Canada. He received his BA from the College of William and Mary in 1966 and his MA from the University of Virginia in 1968. Then he moved to England to complete his DPhil from Oxford University in 1974 under the supervision of R.M. Hare. Fry began his career at the University of Liverpool, first as lecturer from 1974 to 78, and then as senior lecturer from 1978 to 86. After stints as a visiting professor of philosophy at the University of Toronto and BGSU, he became professor of philosophy at BGSU in 1986 and remained there until his retirement. He also held academic appointments as a fellow at the Westminster Institute of Ethics and Public Policy and as a senior research fellow at the Kennedy Institute of Ethics at Georgetown University. Fry taught and published in various areas of moral, political, and legal philosophy. He wrote about the history of philosophy including 18th century British debates about ethics and epistemology involving Bishop Joseph Butler. He wrote and spoke extensively about proper methods and particular issues in normative ethics, applied ethics, and social philosophy. His work emphasized the fruitfulness of utilitarian forms of moral reasoning, and he applied his perspectives to debates about human rights, animal welfare, suicide, medical treatment and experimentation. Fry was a productive author and editor, both on his own and in partnership with others. He was the sole author of the books Interests and Rights and Rights, Killing and Suffering, and he co-authored Euthanasia and Physician-Assisted Suicide with Gerald Dworkin and Cecil Bach. He was the sole editor of books like Utility and Rights in 1984 and The Works of Joseph Butler, 1995. He co-edited three books with Christopher Morris, Liability and Responsibility, 1991, Violence, Terrorism, and Justice, 1991, and Value, Welfare, and Morality, 1992. He also co-edited the book Social Policy and Conflict Resolution with Thomas Adig and Donald Callan in 1985, The Companion to Applied Ethics with Christopher Wellman in 2003, and The Oxford Handbook of Ethics and Animals with Tom Beecham in 2011. He also personally authored over 100 academic articles and book chapters. Fry was prolific beyond his own research projects. As a general editor, he commissioned works for Cambridge University Press on applied ethics and applied philosophy generally for their For and Against series. As a voracious reader of the works of others, he wrote over 75 book reviews for academic journals. As a speaker, he wrote over 80 papers and presentations and delivered them in the U.S. and abroad. And as a colleague, he was instrumental in launching Bowling Green State University's innovative PhD program in applied philosophy. As a teacher and mentor, he supervised to completion 10 doctoral dissertations in less than 20 years. In his teaching, his mentoring, and his day-to-day interactions with colleagues, Ray Fry was well known for his ability to tell stories. These were practical stories about his life and the people and cases he had occasion to encounter. These were entertaining stories told with evident relish and care. These were remarkable stories full of improbability and intrigue. And yet, these were true stories. Well, mostly true stories. Ray was admired and enjoyed by those who knew him, whether as a colleague, as a teacher, as a mentor, or as a friend. He had a special way of being more than one of those things to many of those he knew. A memorial conference in his honor took place at Bowling Green State University on April the 6th, 2013, where current and former students and colleagues gathered and shared fond recollections of his life and work. Ray will be sorely missed. Indeed, he is already sorely missed.
Thanks, Russell. Lastly, many of you have already met Lewis Peake. Lewis is a cousin of Ray's on his mom's side. Did I get that right, Lou? Yeah. And was able to join us. And Lou, if you want to say some things at the end, we'd love to hear from you.